Moncrief
on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avantcard. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. Jonathan de Burke, Butler, joins us once again to bring us stories from other parts of the world. Jonathan, good afternoon.
Sean, how are you getting on?
Senegal, we're going to go to first, and the president there has been re-elected.
Yeah, so the reason I'm including this story, it's not a major international story, but it's just he's a person that we've spoken about quite a bit in this slot over the years, mainly for his involvement in the African Union. And since he's been president, which happened in 2012, his name comes up quite a bit when we talk about politics in that part of the world. So he has been re-elected. That's President Macky Sall. And he won re-election with 58% of the vote. Okay, that was in the first round. So there was nobody really close to him. The person who came second got 21% of the vote, and then third place was 16%. And of course, both of those opposition candidates basically said, oh no, there's no way. This is
rigged. There's
shenanigans going on here. But it's actually, it's one of the most, in terms of transitions of power, it's probably the most peaceful country in Africa. I don't think there's been one. I think every transition of power has been peaceful since 1960. Now, I won't digression on that, but that's when it's got its independence. So it has a pretty good record in that particular department. And he's popular, and he's been brought back in. I mean, they had 72 hours to lodge a complaint or an investigation, and they didn't. So he's back now, and he'll be in for another 5 years.
Okay, right, fair enough.
That's it.
Nigeria we're going to go to next. Now, this is 50 people are presumably dead.
Yeah, they're missing. That's the official statement after a leaking oil pipeline exploded. Now, it's not the first time that we've spoken about something like this in this particular part of the world. This happened in Bayelsa, which is a state in the Niger Delta, which is where masses of oil and gas deposits are. But the problem is it's not very well monitored. It's not very well looked after. Now, you've got the oil companies are down there, of course, and they've been making money since about the 1980s, 1990s, doing very well. Didn't really invest in the local population as they said they would. And now they blame, of course, various different factions, ethnic groups, people who want, particularly in Biafra, which is the area beside this particular state, who want to leave Nigeria. And of course, they're going into these pipelines, taking out the oil, sabotaging the oil, and the oil companies blame them. But of course, people on the ground are the people who ultimately suffer, because they can't farm, they can't fish because the environment is destroyed. And so they go and they try and get the slops of what they can get and sell it on the black market. But of course, they don't really know what they're doing, and accidents happen, and that's what happened in this case.
So this exploded then, this pipeline?
This part of the pipeline exploded, and people were engulfed in flames. I mean, the pictures of it are extraordinary.
Oh my God.
And people who tried to get away from it were presumably killed in a stampede that happened as well. But it's not the first time. I think this is probably the second one, in fact, we've reported on this year. There was another one in January where about 60 people died when an oil tanker crashed and also exploded.
And so the year's barely started yet.
Exactly, yeah absolutely.
Right, we're going to remain in that part of the world. Tanzania, we're going to next now, and 65 witch doctors have been arrested.
65 in total, yeah. 45 in one state in the north, and 20 in another state in the southwest of the country. Now, this is on the back of a spate of child murders. In fact, there's been about 10 child murders that police are investigating in the area since January of this year. And, of course, this comes on the back of reports over the last number of years of witch doctors basically targeting people. They can be old or young, but particularly targeting children with albinism, because it's believed that the body parts of children with albinism will bring you good luck. And it doesn't help that around the time of elections and various different local elections, politicians go to these witch doctors looking for a change in their luck or looking for a superstitious boost in the polls, shall we say, and they buy these things off these witch doctors.
Oh my word.
So it's crazy stuff, and the police in Tanzania, who have tried in recent years to crack down on this, have decided to take action in this particular case.
Presumably there might be some kind of pushback from the communities that traditionally have supported them.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's the tradition. I mean, the laws are brought in, but quite often it takes a generation for the culture to catch up with the laws that are brought in to try and stop this, you know. And they've tried everything with you know, licensing witch doctors. And in this case, that's what they say they're doing. I mean, they are bringing in as many as they can. They're questioning them, and they're going to try and get to the bottom of what happened to these children. But they might not get that much help from some people within the local communities there.
Right. Argentina, we're going to next. Now, this is quite a horrific
story.
Yeah,
it's not great. Yeah.
This is an 11-year-old who gave birth.
Yes, this is an 11-year-old who gave birth after 23 weeks pregnancy. So the child, baby boy, was delivered via C-section after 23 weeks. So, as you said, the details of it are fairly harrowing. There's a bit of a backstory. She has two older sisters, and the family were moved to their grandmother's house by the state because the two older sisters were being abused by her mother's boyfriend. Now, when the family got to the grandmother's house, the boyfriend of the grandmother, 65-year-old man, started abusing the 11-year-old girl, and that's how she became pregnant. She didn't know, obviously, that she was pregnant because she's 11. She complained of stomach cramps, went to the doctors, and they discovered that the situation that she was in. So she requested an abortion.
Yeah.
Right. But there was a delay of 5 weeks. So
abortion, the legal situation in regards to
it's
abortion.
It's not legal except in exceptional circumstances.
Okay.
And
right.
This was deemed by the medical authorities who were looking after this particular case to have been an exceptional circumstance.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So the problem was that there was various different political maneuverings that were trying to disrupt her from getting what she had asked for and what the legal or what the medical people involved in this particular case thought was the right thing for her to get. Okay,
yeah.
So there was a situation whereby because the mother wasn't the legal guardian anymore, she couldn't give her consent.
Mm-hmm.
But the grandmother, because of her connection to the man who had raped her, there was also doubts over her legal position as well. So while everybody was faffing about for the 5 weeks trying to find out what they needed to do or who was the person who had to give the consent, she went into labour and was brought into a hospital and had to go through a C-section. It's absolutely horrendous.
And was it a live birth? Is there a baby now?
There is a baby, yeah. There is a baby, but it's unlikely it will survive, but you never know.
3 weeks.
Yeah.
Oh, the poor girl. My word, that's absolutely extraordinary. Right, India, we're going to next. Now, this is kind of a Trumpian moment, perhaps, one could say.
From Narendra Modi, indeed, of all people. Yes, he was at a talk. I think it was actually a sort of gathering that was being held by engineering students, and he was on Skype or something like that. And these engineering students were putting forward their pitches for ideas that they had for a Smart India hackathon. Okay, and a woman was telling him about an idea that he had to help. For helping dyslexic children. Now, at that point, Modi turned around and said, I'll give the quote. He said, "Will this program work for a 40 to 50-year-old child too?" And the room descended into laughter. So the context of that is that at the moment, there is an election being fought, even though the date hasn't been set yet, in India. And one of Modi's main opponents is a man by the name of Rahul Gandhi, who he seems to think is an idiot, and he's referred to him as an idiot before. So the reference was taken up quite quickly by the people in the audience or who were listening, and they laughed and they applauded those who are his supporters. But it's backfired on him now, because people who are obviously champions for people with dyslexia have decided that it wasn't a very, you know, it was kind of a stupid and flippant comment to make. So they've asked him to apologise. As yet, he hasn't. But it hasn't gone down very well. And we're in an election cycle. As I said, the date hasn't been fixed yet, but the campaigning has begun. So it's not a good start for him.
And apparently like 10% of Indian kids
that's an estimate.
Yeah.
That's an estimate. You know, 35 million people.
A lot of parents there to be annoyed at him.
Yes, indeed. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So not a very clever thing to do. So an apology would be probably the clever move.
Right, Italy we're going to go to now, and a Camorra boss has been arrested.
Yeah, this is a man by the name of Marco Di Lauro. He's 38-year-old, son of Paolo Di Lauro. Now, Paolo was is a ex-Camorra boss who was arrested back in 2005 and has been languishing in jail ever since. But his son Marco, it was believed, was the guy who took over the whole operation in and around Naples, and has been running the show for the last 14 years. But there's also been an international arrest warrant out for him for the last 14 years, but he's evaded capture, even though he's been living, you know, hiding in plain sight in Naples. So it's quite probable that a lot of people knew where he was, but last week he was arrested, and it's a big deal in Italy. It made all the front pages. He was, you know, one of Italy's four most wanted criminals, apparently, and was considered the second most dangerous man in Italy. So it's a big coup for the Italian police there. But it's interesting, when they went in, it's such a scene from a movie. When they went in, apparently he was sitting at his table eating pasta, and before they arrested him, they allowed him to go in and freshen up and have a shower and that. So,
finishes
yeah,
pasta.
Yeah, absolutely.
And is there any discussion as to how come this chap was just living in Naples and no one thought to look there?
Well, it's probably because, you know, you don't give somebody up. It's interesting, that morning there was a murder in the same city, and it was one of his associates, a man by the name of Salvatore Tamburino, and he murdered his wife, effectively, to cut a long story short, and handed himself into the police. So the police, when they were, you know, questioned by the media, when they were asked, you know, is this any connection to the murder this morning? They didn't say yes and they didn't say no. So it's, some people are speculating that Tamburino went in, "I've just killed my wife, but I know where Marco Di Lauro is. Let's do a bit of a deal here." And they said,
right,
"We'll take that deal."
Okay, that
so,
was probably bound
that
to happen.
Might be why he was arrested on that particular day.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll move on to the scandal in the world of international bridge, because
yes.
I feel that the listeners really do need to know about what's really going on there.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a world number one bridge star, a man by the name of Geir Hegelmo. He's from Norway, but he represents Monaco. He did a deal with Monaco a few years ago, and he switched allegiance. So he's a 49-year-old. He's kind of a poster boy for this particular sport, but he's going to be out until November the 20th, and he's out because he was caught doping, apparently. So at a tournament in Orlando in September, he did a test, and he was found to have taken synthetic testosterone and female fertility drug, which is called Clomiphene, apparently.
Okay.
And even though the World Bridge Federation have come out and said they feel sorry for them and that it's a terrible mistake and he's taken full responsibility for it, and they've said that it wasn't in fact a performance enhancing drug, he has been banned because it is apparently, it goes under Olympic rules, and they're
right,
on the list,
yeah,
of Olympic drugs that are banned. Or
and has he given any explanation as to why he was taking these drugs?
Well, he hasn't, actually. He hasn't said anything on it, but I'd love to know why he did it. Now, I looked into him. He's a bit of an interesting character. In 2017, he was sentenced to 6 months in prison in Norway for tax evasion. And he's a bit of a hellraiser in the bridge world. So, a controversy there.
Right. Okay. Right. So, what should we look out for over the coming weeks?
Yes, yeah, so on Friday, obviously it's International Women's Day, so there'll be various different events marking that. Sunday is the 60th anniversary, would you believe, of Tibet's Dalai Lama fleeing into exile after the failed revolution that they had there. And Monday in Baghdad, here's a curious one, President Hassan Rouhani is going to visit Iraq, apparently, and that'll be interesting. And then on Tuesday, well, it's the circus. I have it down here in my notes. Circus rolls into Westminster.
Because
so
that could be
Brexit.
The day of the meaningful vote.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I'm sure it'll be delayed again.
Very meaningful. Jonathan, thanks a million
thanks
for coming
into
us. Jonathan De Barker-Butler there. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief
on News Talk. Sponsored by Avant Card. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.